If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 181. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
I am Matt.
And these are the beginning... Well, this is the first podcast of our September of 2021. We're heading into the last quarter of the year. It seems like this... Oddly enough, this year has kind of gone pretty quickly for me. At least for me, it seems to be.
It has its moments.
So, I think we'll start off with entertainment news.
Okay.
Well, we'll probably talk all about entertainment, pop culture this episode. And, we'll save all the technology stuff for the next episode. But one of the things I want to talk about is the cancellation, which I think is rightly so, of Mike Richards at Jeopardy. You know, not only did the misogynistic tweets... get called out that he had made, but then, you know, they found out that he was all the lawsuits have gone on where they've either settled out of court or been taken to court and lost for discrimination against female employees on the shows that he was the executive producer for, which include Jeopardy and The Price is Right. And so he was kind of forced to resign. Fans did not want him anyway. And everybody thought it was a cop-out that he was chosen as, out of all of the people who had tried out for the host of Jeopardy, thought it was a real cop-out that they made him the host. It was like, you know, it was more of an ego thing than it was something that would make the show better. And now there's a sense of betrayal from all the fans where they think that, you know, so... Not only did it would it have hurt the show if he had stayed, it's hurt the show that they made the decision at all.
Yeah.
And now they're back to trying to figure out who to get to host, and now the issue is so they made an announcement which kind of closed the door, and so a lot of the people who were kind of keeping their schedules open to do the show now are going, I'm not available, you know, try me again next year. And you know, and that includes some of the people who I thought did fairly well, like Aaron Rodgers. He was one of the earlier people who was temporarily hosting the show and was in the running. LeVar Burton has filled his schedule up, so it's not necessarily sure what's going on with that, whether or not he can rearrange things or, you know, become available. They've talked about bringing Mayim Bialik, who they named for their spinoff show, which was the college version, as the main host. But then, does she host both shows? Or, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. It's kind of...
And she's not very engaging.
No, she was not. I didn't think she was a good choice there either. I think that was more of a decision that was made because she was available. You know, I agree with most of the Jeopardy fans that it should have been LeVar Burton, and if not LeVar Burton, then Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers had a great rapport with the guests, and you know, he would crack jokes with them and things like that. You know, but it, you know, I also have to say, if you go back and watch Jeopardy when they first brought it back, and Alex Trebek was out there, he was not the most engaging host. It was something that he developed over the years, you know, to be who we loved as Alex Trebek. But the other thing I have to say is, you know, when he died, he ran the show for 30 years, so it's been on for 30 years. Maybe it's time for Jeopardy to take a break.
I'm not opposed.
Because, you know, I know why the networks don't want it to happen, but that's because with the streaming services, game shows are one of the things that nobody watches on a streaming service.
That's true.
But you also have to wonder, you know, is since a lot of people have cut the cord, is the fact, you know, and I won't say game shows aren't watched on streaming services, but... the game shows that are watched are things like American Ninja, you know, those types of shows.
Yeah.
You know, where
more of a reality show than a game show.
Correct. Well, I don't really call those reality shows. What was the one on Netflix? So it was very. And they had a similar one on Hulu. That was, but Terry Crews was the American host, and they had hosts from every nation, and the teams would come in, and something Dragon. And but you know, it was a field competition where they had to do the same types of things, and in many cases, much harder. You had to be a much stronger competitor and stronger athlete to be able to go on and do what was being done in these shows. But, you know, that's the... It kind of is, like you're saying, a reality show without the premeditated drama injection, you know? We're going to starve people so that they don't think straight, and then we're going to cause drama between them so that then you know, we can ratchet up the views, the whole survival model.
When the drama comes from the sport itself,
so, yeah,
you don't need all that extra stuff,
yeah.
Which is kind of why I find wrestling a little bizarre. They don't need to script that stuff. It's
no.
Plenty entertaining enough.
But on the other hand, if they didn't pull punches and made it look the way they did, they would just be out there beating the shit out of each other and killing. Probably
well,
more
just,
people would die.
We'll just call that mixed martial arts and
yeah.
Be done with it.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing Matt and I were talking earlier, we mentioned it in the last entertainment episode, because I hate to have all these entertainment episodes, but you know, we're leading up to some fairly. You know, like I said, the last quarter of the year, we're leading up to some fairly interesting things that are happening in the technology world, in the political arena that affects, you know, technology. And we're going to talk about some of those because that's starting to come up. But, you know, right now we're on that cusp for fall TV to start. And fall TV has certainly changed. You know, it is not... I'm not waiting for it to come on CBS and ABC and NBC's broadcast channels. I'm waiting for it to come on all the streaming services, all the, you know, whether you're like Apple TV, where you do the traditional model of every Friday you release a new episode, or you're Hulu, who releases the whole series at once. Well, Hulu's also a Friday. Well, they depend. It depends on the show. Some they do every Friday or every
depends
week.
On if it's a Hulu show or if it's one that's been ported over from a network.
But you know, all of that new TV is starting. I should say Netflix, if it's give you the whole series in one smack. And I can't argue with either of the formats. It is
depends on the show.
It depends on the show. Yeah. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that Netflix has been making Netflix distinguished from all the other streaming services is because, like, Apple TV releases all their shows, new episodes, on Fridays. All the shows. It doesn't matter what show it is. And I will say this, they have some tremendous shows that I think you should check out on Apple TV+. Hulu, they do mix it up during the week, and so does Disney, but Disney's kind of gotten the Thursday thing going on. They like release all their shows at like 12:01 about 3:01 Eastern time, so 12:01 Pacific time on Thursday mornings, because that's when Bad Batch would show up. It was right around 3 a.m. in the morning.
So are you saying Thursday night or Friday morning?
It's Thursday morning. So 12 midnight on Wednesday, when it hits 12:01 Pacific time on Thursday, they would release the show.
I guess I lost track of it because I thought that was a Friday show on Disney because
They
were dropping all their shows on Friday.
They were, and I think they started mixing it up.
The Marvel bit, they moved to Wednesdays to line up with the comic release day. So that kind of made sense.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. But, I'm looking up when a couple... Well, I can't see it. I have to open the VPN, tunnel back to my network, and I can see the...
I haven't seen it yet, but while you're looking that up, have you watched the Disney Plus Turner and Hooch series?
I have not.
And I ask only because I hear it's good, but I haven't invested any time in it yet.
I have not watched it. I don't watch a lot on Disney Plus unless it's Star Wars, frankly, and... I will watch the Marvel stuff if it's, like, one of my favorite Marvel characters. Which brings me to the What If.
Okay.
So, What If evidently had a break this week, but it comes out on...
That's a Wednesday show.
Yeah. On Wednesdays. And, but I've actually, you know, you talked about last episode when we talked about entertainment... Or which was, I think, two episodes ago at this point. You were kind of tired of... You're having trouble watching the What If show.
Yeah.
And so I went and I thought, I'm going to watch it. I wasn't even going to watch it. Because, well, I'm so sick of the superhero crap from Marvel. It's... You know, this Phase 4 is just tiring. Thor... My two favorite Marvel superheroes... well, really, my three favorite Marvel superheroes were Captain America, Sergeant Savage, and Thor. And the Uncanny X-Men. I had all four of those were like my... Growing up, those were the comic books I read. Or, you know, four out of the sheaf of 40 that got pulled for me every month. But, you know, I can't... Some of these weird... How do I want to say this? Some of these, like, B-movie Marvel superheroes, like this new Shang-Chi. And even Doctor Strange was never one of my favorites.
But at least Doctor Strange I'd heard of.
Yes.
Now, you had to really be an Iron Man fan to know what's going on with the Ten Rings.
Yes.
And
I was not an Iron Man fan. I didn't like Tony Stark. I didn't... The problem I had with... I read Iron Man, because I have a couple boxes full of Iron Man comics. Because, again, I was pulled with my sheaf of comics as a kid at the comic book store. But I hated the whole Nick Fury, Iron Man contention. Because I'm like, you know, you're supposed to be on the same side and all this other stuff. And they were always fighting each other. And it was like... Let me put it this way. It became so contentious in the comic books, and I know people will argue with me about this, but it's hard to remember who the real villains in the Iron Man comic books were.
Yeah. Which brings me to Batman and Superman.
So, I do want to say thing.
They're supposed to be friends.
Yes, they are. And Zack Snyder's kind of ruined that. Kinda.
Well,
he's trying to bring it back around town. Bringing it around town. Sorry, SpongeBob reference.
The whole Batman is supposed to be dark thing is part of what started that.
Yeah. Well, and the Christian Bale Batman movies are my least favorite. My wife doesn't even like them. She likes the... And you can't... I mean, Jack Nicholson is the Joker. He's still the best Joker to me in the world. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? You know. He's the best Joker. And, you know, that Batman, even though Michael Keaton didn't do all of that series of Batman movies, you know, they had Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne in one. And I forget who... There was a third one who was Batman also. But...
George Clooney.
Yeah, that's right. They kept... Batman was always both in the comic books until they got into the Dark Knight series, Batman was a little bit campy. And it was supposed to add that level of humor. And that's why people who liked the 60s Batman TV show liked the original movies.
Yes.
And when they went to the Dark Knight, you know, all the movies and stuff like that at that point, and all superhero movies, minus the original Captain America, the first Avengers movie, the Iron Man movies, from Disney, all that was dark. You know, it was... And if you look at some of the subsequent television shows, and this is why I'm kind of confused by Warner Brothers, because they're the ones who, I think they owned it at that point when they started doing the Dark Knight movies. But then you get to see the CW, and you had Arrow, which Arrow was a fairly dark show, but you have The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow, which is campy to the point of too campy, although I'm going to come back on that because the last episode was actually really good. But you know, there's this dichotomy going on. There's a set of Arrow characters or DC Universe characters in the television shows, which there's Clark and, you know, that it's all The Flash, Clark and Lois, Arrow, which ended, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, you know, they're all in the same universe. Supergirl's part of that. And to a large degree, some of those shows I think are fairly enjoyable, although I think I'm getting superhero fatigue.
That's why I stuck with the Marvel stuff and didn't watch the DC stuff as closely. Like, I can't remember the last time I... It probably was Legends of Tomorrow was the last thing I actually saw, and it wasn't
recently. Well, I was always a much bigger fan of DC superhero characters than the Marvel ones growing up, with the exception of Captain America, Sergeant Savage, and that's pretty much it. I mean, the X-Men and
yeah, I was never an X-Men fan.
I liked Thor because Thor, the comic book, was slightly campy.
Well, it has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so outrageous a character to start with. And who all does he hang out with? Loki?
Yeah, I know.
I mean...
Well, and that's part of why I liked Thor, was I liked the whole... Odin, Loki, Thor, you know, Freya, you know, the whole pantheon of Viking gods. And I like the concept that they really weren't gods. They were just an advanced alien species that when, you know, humans were much more primitive, you know, what is one of the fundamentals of scientific advancement? And they always say is, you know... Technology so advanced looks like magic to somebody who's not educated.
It's Arthur C. Clarke.
Yep. And, but going back to the dichotomy about the shows is, so you have these shows which, for the most part, are campy, and then they also had shows that I really enjoyed, like Gotham.
Gotham was really good.
That was dark.
To me, though, that one wasn't a... superhero show?
But it was a Batman show.
But it was a Batman universe show.
Yeah.
Without Batman. Which is...
Well, that's not really true. I mean, because the whole idea of Gotham was you were getting the prehistory of what leads up to the Dark Knight, technically.
Sure.
You know, and so you're getting Gordon and, you know, what happens to him and makes him the way he is and... You know, young Bruce Wayne and what kind of turns him into becoming Batman and the Joker and the Penguin and, you know, and the villains who existed before him, like Fish Mooney and all that. I really loved that show. I was really sad to see it go. And I also, the other show that I really like, which is kind of weird, and it's, again, it's part of Gotham, but it's like the prequel to Gotham, and it's called Pennyworth. And you kind of learning how did Pennyworth become the way he was, you know? And
that was a good show too.
And and all of that. I still haven't watched the last five episodes. But, you know, you kind of... they're like these this Batman universe shows. And I think that's why there's no Batman show on the CW. And, you know, thank
God... But that's because they can't. Because yeah. What they're trying to do is supplement what's happening in the theaters. And you're not going to... I'm shocked that they've put Lois and Clark back together, because Superman is a big theatrical draw.
Correct, but you know, they through the shows they did the multiverse, and so the Superman that was in the multiverse, the one that was in their prime universe that most of those characters came from, and the Lois, they're the ones that Lois and Clark are about. And it's actually been a... It's kind of weird, too. It's in that universe, but it is not a campy show. Like Supergirl is. And I'm glad Supergirl is ending. This is the last season.
Oh, thank God.
I'm waiting for Supergirl to break out in song and dance. Like, because, you know, she was from Glee when Glee fell apart.
Man, I survived the first season, and somewhere in season two, I just gave up.
But the other dichotomy I find with Warner Brothers is you then have the movies, Batman versus Superman. Well, and they're kind—they're not a continuation of The Dark Knight, but it's like a reset. And so you have Batman versus Superman, Justice League, Aquaman, which... The Aquaman movie is really, really good. I think Jason Momoa did a great job as being Aquaman, and how they did it. And I also really enjoyed the Jack Snyder Justice League movie. It's one of those movies that I'm glad it came out on HBO Max and not on in the movie theater, because it's so long. I watched it over the course of 2 days, but... You'd have had to have a 30-minute intermission to get everybody to the bathroom if you'd watched the movie theater, the Zack Snyder cut. And then, you know, they also have added to those, and they're campy, but they're not campy. You know, the movies with Harley Quinn, so the first Suicide Squad, then Birds of Prey, and now the second Suicide Squad, which was just on HBO Max and in the movie theaters. I believe they pulled that today. But I just watched it 2 days ago because they were going to pull it from HBO Max. And it was really good. And Idris Elba, his character in the second Suicide Squad is just phenomenal. And they did a good job. They did a much better job with the second one than they did the first one. Because the first one, they tried to use too much of the star power of everybody. You know, Will Smith and all these guys to drive the story. When in reality, the story was about Harley Quinn. And then Birds of Prey is the, you know, the sequel to that. And so now you have an established Harley Quinn character who they're now developing her story even more and in a better way. And in the second Suicide Squad, you actually begin to like her in some respects. And you realize there is a little bit of honor among thieves. You know, you hear these stories that when child molesters end up going to prison, that they don't usually come out. It's kind of that. They built off that vibe, you know, that there are some things that even though she's clinically insane, she doesn't go for. And you find, you know, Idris Elba's character is similar to that as Bloodsport in the second Suicide Squad. And, you know, and that's all in that same universe. The other thing in the second Suicide Squad is they introduce Amanda Waller, who is... also was, you know, first was introduced in Arrow and has been kept through that whole universe on the television shows, but you really hate her in the second Suicide Squad movie. You realize that she's very opportunistic and she doesn't really care about human life, and, you know, it's whatever gets the goal accomplished, or her goal accomplished. And so that's an interesting play on all. You know, but I've really enjoyed their movies because their movies make the characters grow. And yeah, they kill off characters, and yeah, they've been adding new characters, which is similar to the Marvel Universe, but it's not the number of characters. You know, the problem with you have the Marvel Universe is at this point, it's like reading War and Peace or reading the Game of Thrones books by George R. R. Martin, because there's not only are there hundreds of superheroes, you know, who in some story or another take over, you know, have a portion of the story, but then there's hundreds of characters who have more than just being in the background that you have to kind of pay attention to because they show up here and there, or they become important, you know, three movies down the road, because now they're the focus of being the villain, or they're the focus of being the protagonist. I mean, it's kind of overwhelming. And when you take the whole Marvel universe with all the series along with all the movies, I that's where I think the whole superhero fatigue comes in. And then you add the DC stuff on top of it, and it's like, you know.
To me, the funniest thing is, and now they're trying to figure out how to bring Tony Stark back.
Yes. Well, and they've also talked about bringing Chris Evans back as Captain America again. You know?
Which is even harder, yeah. I think.
Well, you know, it's... What did we always say, being huge Star Trek fans? And I even read an article on this, too. Even in Star Trek, if you're dead, you're not dead. And that seems to be true
Marvel Universe. There's a whole Lower Decks episode.
Yes.
Around that idea.
Yeah. But... staying in the superhero vein here for one more second. Okay. So, I don't know any more details on this, but I did see a post where there was a... Disney posted this on their Twitter account, and I saw the post somewhere else where they showed the picture. It was on the Disney Channel. It showed a calendar. It said... had September 10th circled, and then it said WandaVision and a heart. So I'm curious if they're going to release some kind of WandaVision or related to WandaVision thing on the 10th. And that was kind of the supposition of what people were posting and making comments on.
Well, I mean, they've done the behind the scenes stuff that they do for these shows. You know, once they run about a month later, they'll do a retrospective of how they made it. They just did the Mandalorian one with how they kept Luke Skywalker a secret for the whole season. Maybe it's something along those lines. I can't imagine they're doing anything else new with WandaVision. There wasn't much left.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been talking about the What If series wouldn't have existed if Loki had season one hadn't happened. You wouldn't have known about the TVA. That's the Time Variance Authority, not the Tennessee Valley Authority. And you wouldn't have known about the Watcher. So one of the things that's kind of come up about that, too, is now there's... You know, people are thinking about the spoilers left in the end of the last episode of Loki and what that means for season two, because there's a giant plot hole. So the TVA has been hunting down Lokis forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, throwing them in essentially interdimensional hell. And so when you go back to the end of the last episode, Loki comes back, and Mobius doesn't recognize Loki.
Correct. Now, there's a visual cue as to why that is, if you've not seen this piece.
Okay.
His hair is different, and his tie is actually all the way up.
So is it another Loki?
It's another TVA. It's a variant of the TVA. That's what I'm going with.
Well, you know, also the statues in the back, you know,
are different.
They're not of the three fake timekeepers. that they showed, it's actually a giant statue of Kang, who is the Watcher, technically. Well, a variant of the Watcher. Or a variant of Kang is the Watcher. Kang the Conqueror.
If you buy that, I don't necessarily.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. So let's switch tracks to Lower Decks.
Yes, let's.
So I enjoyed the first season. I'm going to reiterate something I've probably said before. I enjoyed the first season of Lower Decks, but I am anticipating episodes of the second season of Lower Decks. I can't wait till Thursdays come around so I can watch them.
So apparently, I didn't watch much of Lower Decks last year.
Yeah.
I went back and watched it.
I mean, there's some classic things in Lower Decks. And I think one of the things you were kind of turned off about Lower Decks, was that it was kind of Star Trek making fun of itself a little bit.
Which I don't necessarily have a problem with if it's done in a Galaxy Quest kind of way. Which...
to a large degree, it has
been. It has been. It's been done respectfully, which...
What's been great about it, it should show J.J. Abrams how to do an homage to something. But so should the Orville. I mean, if you really think about it, Seth MacFarlane, he was actually on Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know? And he is a big fan. Now... that being said, it's Lower Decks, the Easter eggs and the references to things that happen in TOS and TNG and Enterprise, and some of them, are meant to be funny, but they're not done in a, it's kind of weird, it's not really done in a campy way.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, Lower Decks, I'm going to switch gears a little bit to make a point about Lower Decks that I wish. So, I really enjoyed The Bad Batch. Because everything Disney has done with Star Wars that is bookended by canon, by a movie, they've actually done a fairly good job of. Because they have to make sure continuity happens. Like, JJ, make a note. Continuity. It's important. And so... they introduce characters and they develop the characters and they do a good job, and they've been refining it. I think they've been getting better and better and better. When you go from the animated series from Star Wars Rebels to Star Wars Resistance, which I actually thought was fairly good, even though I won't consider that canonical because that's post it is bookended, but it's on something they're going to bookended on something they're going to retcon anyway. And then you have Bad Batch in there between, the end of the Clone Wars and The New Hope. They're engaging characters. It's a show I anticipated watching every week. There were some good plot twists that you didn't completely see coming. Disney's a little hit you on the head with some of their plots, but it was an enjoyable show. But Matt and I were talking about this, and what would have made that show better is if it were live action.
And honestly, they could have told that whole story in a single 2-hour movie.
Yes.
And I'd have been okay.
Yeah. But the thing I have about, and don't get me wrong, I love Lower Decks, and I think the animation is fun, and everything, and they've added a couple new tropes to the Star Trek mythos. But I would like to see a live-action version of it. I would like to see the people who are voicing the actors actually come in or voicing the characters actually come in and act the characters out. I think it would be interesting to see somebody, see Tawny Newsome as Mariner in person, at least for an episode. and Jack Quaid as Boimler. I think, you know, because the funny thing is, and Jerry O'Connell as
Ransom.
As Ransom, you know? And I think it would be interesting to see them all in live action.
But that last one, he looks nothing like his character.
Oh, I know.
At all. Which is why I think that'd be difficult to pull off.
Oh, I don't think so.
I mean, you could do it, but then you'd have to recognize that these actors are not
who they
are portraying in cartoon form.
Yeah, well, I think it would work for everybody. Jerry O'Connell is our age, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
He'd be a little old for that, but, you know, he looks pretty good. It could be believable if you throw a fake mustache and beard on him. You know? I particularly liked the last Titan episode with Boimler, where essentially he gets Tom Reichert and, hey, we're going to have to send one of you back to the Cerritos as an ensign.
As an ensign, yeah.
So not only did he get Tom Reichert,
he got Brian
to...
Too.
Who is the most beloved hero in Starfleet, you know.
That's funny.
And you know, the last episode was phenomenal. The whole, you know, paying tribute to the fact that just because you die doesn't mean you're dead, you know.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is the episode before that, they took the time to devote an entire episode to a new security chief character, which has not been seen since.
Well, actually, he was on the bridge in a scene in the last episode.
Really? Yes. As I was particularly looking for him, and I missed him.
Yeah, but he wasn't, you know, other than that, he wasn't a character in the show.
Right.
He was just window dressing in a scene of the bridge.
Which is fine if that's what they're going to do with him, but... Seems like a waste.
Well, what I also liked about that, because he's a what's his race?
Yeah,
you know, Darmok.
Darmok from and Jolata Tanagra.
But you know, he's speaking in that previous episode like he's a, you know, in his native tongue, which all uses metaphors to, you know, from their history to talk to each other. So if you don't know their history, you can't.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, I forgot. Let me speak Federation Standard. You know? And then Mariner chimes in his language.
You know, of course.
All metaphors. I also like that episode because that's the, you know, so that episode was important for a couple things. You know, that was really the first time that you had Mariner and Tendi interact solely with each other.
Yeah.
And then also, you learn a lot, you know, the show is really about Beckett, Mariner, and Boimler to a large degree. Because those are the two characters that they spend, you know, the prime arc of the show on. Rutherford and Tendi, you know, they get the short arcs, like, you know, we're doing something together. But, you know, they're really developing the Mariner character in the second season. We're finding a little bit more about her. We know that she's served on three different starships. She's been, you know, she was a lieutenant. She's been bucked down to ensign again.
She was Ro Larrand.
Yep. You know. And I still go back to the season opener for season two and how she's doing the workout in the holodeck.
It's leg day.
It's leg day. And so she's doing squats in the middle of trying to escape in a starship. I mean, it's very well done.
I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
I think
is what I'm getting at.
If you compare the first season to the second season, and I understand part of that, you know, the first season you got to introduce the characters, you got to introduce some of the
in like half the time you would a regular show.
Correct. Yeah, because it's a 30-minute cartoon.
Well, I know that, but there's only 10 episodes.
Yeah. And, you know, they were developing, and they were also developing some of the historical antagonisms, you know, plot points, like Mariner and her mother. And
Second Contact.
And Boimler and his obsession to be the perfect Starfleet officer. And, I mean, you know, and so they're, as they're developing that, now they're being able to develop the characters much more fully in the second season. And but I think they turned it up to 11 on the second season compared to the first season, so that it's a much more compelling show.
I just wish they hadn't build it as a comedy, because I don't find it particularly funny.
It has humorous moments.
It does, but Trek's always had that.
Humor, yeah.
And you've never it's referred to Star Trek as a comedy.
Even the original animated series, you know.
You've had moments of levity, and that's any drama. That's one of the devices in a drama, is to have moments of levity so that you can release the tension, so that you can build it back up again.
That's one of the things about Star Trek that you've, and that's also one of the things that, one of the few things I have to complain about in Voyager, or not Voyager, in Discovery. I really like Star Trek Discovery, and I've loved a lot of their characters, but Discovery has taken on this dark arc for the last, since it started. You know, it's Star Trek The Dark Knight. And the problem is Star Trek typically has always been, even though they had dark moments in all the series, the idea was to question, you know, do these dark moments have to happen? Can we become better than we are? You know, that kind of thing. But Discovery's beat it over the head in the sense of that, you know, they go from really bad catastrophe to really bad catastrophe all the time. And there's very few moments in Discovery where there's that redemption, where you're seeing that there was a good one last season, and that's where Saru forces everybody to have dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that there were some great moments of levity there. And and in the first season, I would say one of the great moments of levity was the Harry Mudd episode with Lorca, you know. But there's always been this sense of hope that we as a species, we and as a society, multi-species society, we get better overall.
There's one thing that I'm hoping Discovery will fix that I lay at the feet of the Next Generation, which continued in Picard, and it's that Starfleet is a dishonorable organization, and all the admirals and ambassadors and the Federation is corrupt.
Yeah, I agree.
Gene Roddenberry is rolling in his grave.
Yep. I concur with you. So, let's talk about a couple of things in the short term.
Okay.
This month, September 2021, at the end of the month, I think it's on the 24th, the Isaac Asimov Foundation series is going to be released on Apple TV Plus. I'm super psyched about that. Actually, in my household, that is the big event for us. We're waiting for that because what most people don't realize is that, and you can check this out, but Isaac Asimov, even though he wrote the books out of order, if you go from and this includes a lot of his short stories. If you go from I, Robot till Foundation and Earth, the last book he wrote, it is a single series talking about humanity and its expansion. But the cool thing about it is you can pick any book out of any of that series and read it as a standalone. But until you read all of them, you don't realize that he's taking you through like 50,000 years of human history in space. And so that's why I'm psyched about this whole Foundation series, because not only was Foundation a long series in and of itself, it originally had 3 books, and then you added Foundation and Earth at the end to kind of wrap things up. This opens the pathway to go back and fill in all of the gaps. And actually do iRobot right. The movie with Will Smith had elements from the book, but it wasn't really the story of iRobot, which was a book of short stories. And there's actually a second book that followed that one years later that was a continuation of those short stories. But it talks about... Because robots and the 3 laws of robotics are hugely important through this entire series, from iRobot to Foundation and Earth. And it might actually get to the point where iRobot gets done right, where they, because with the short stories, they can do it in an episodic format, as opposed to having to create a 2.5-hour movie, which you couldn't do the whole thing, you know, because they're vignettes. So we're very psyched about that. Also, in October, on HBO Max and in movie theaters, the new Dune movie will be out, which I'm also very psyched about. It might actually be Dune done right. Might be.
I like the original flick.
I do too, but I like it because of the cast, not because it was, it really told the story well.
Right.
You know, Kyle MacLachlan and Sting.
Patrick Stewart. Stewart,
yeah, as Duncan Idaho. Or actually, he wasn't Duncan. He was...
Gurney Halleck.
Gurney Halleck. Yeah. Duncan was a much better looking guy.
Yeah, and he was somebody too.
Yeah, I forget who was. Well, even the guy who played Duke Leto Atreides was, and Jessica Atreides, and Sean Young was in that movie as, yeah, I mean, a lot of stars. But I have a feeling the best parts of that movie got left on the editing room floor.
Well, and that's because back then you made a 2-hour movie, and it was a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
You weren't making these 4-hour extravaganzas with, you know, 3 intermissions and a coffee break. I mean, it just, yeah, that didn't happen back then.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm trying to think of what else is coming out that might be exciting. There's lots of new TV coming out. We should get some more What If. I believe there's at least 3 What If, new What If episodes coming out on Disney Plus this month. They'll be after Labor Day weekend. And what else? We probably will not see any other Star Trek until early 2022. Although season 4 of Discovery has wrapped, but they just wrapped recently, like in the last couple weeks. Strange New Worlds wrapped a couple months ago. So we'll probably see that before we see season 4 of Discovery, because they got to do all the post-production work.
And Orville finally wrapped like a week or so ago.
Yeah, and so we might see that sooner than... because Hulu's been wanting to...
Plus, they've been doing post...
On the episodes while they've been filming the new episodes. Yeah. And again, that'll be another one that's released weekly, so... They could probably get away with that. Although they're supposed to be... I mean, this new season, season 3 of Orville, is supposed to be very compelling.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am as well.
That was another one that I went into it wanting to not like.
Yep.
And turns out it really is a Galaxy Quest.
It is. It's some of the best Star Trek not made by Paramount.
Yeah.
There's also rumors that Amazon might be picking up doing the Galaxy Quest series.
Now, I've been hearing that for a while, and I don't know if...
The issue
that's going to be hard because...
Well, the issue is not... It's not going to be... For a long time, the whole idea of bringing Galaxy Quest back was they were going to get Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver and Alan Ruckman and all of them to come back, but then Alan Ruckman passed away. Tim Allen is not believable as
Well, he wasn't believable the first time, but does the rolling help?
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver, I don't think they can afford.
She, out of all of them, she's the one who wants to do it.
Yeah.
She loved that character and loved what Galaxy Quest was all about.
But, you know, that might be an issue going forward, is not being able to get the cast back.
And, of course, Daryl Chill is...
Well, he got hurt in the motorcycle accident. Plus, he's also tied to NCIS. Well, he's released from NCIS New Orleans, but, you know, he was in that motorcycle accident, which has confined him to a wheelchair for the rest of his life. So, you know, the one person who is kind of absent from the scene right now is Tony Shalhoub as Tech Sergeant Chen.
He'd be the one I think would be hard to get back.
I think you would, too. I think you could get Missy Pyle to come back. But,
And I think you could get, the dude who I can never say his name. He was the alien commander who's done a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
Before and since. I can never say his name. Even when I see it, I can't pronounce it.
But, you know, I think the idea now is to recast.
I would be okay with that if they called it Galaxy Quest The Next Generation. But if they try and reboot it, I don't think it'll... Capturing that particular lightning in that particular bottle was hard enough the first time.
Yeah, well, nobody ever anticipated it to be as popular as it was, you know?
Well, you know the story... Patrick Stewart did not want to go see it.
Uh-huh.
And Jonathan Frakes called him up and said, hey, not only should you see it, but go see it in a packed theater with Star Trek fans. And he absolutely loved it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was phenomenal. I remember going to see it in the movie theater, and I've probably watched it a million times since then. It's always one of my go-to movies going back. I think it could be redone with a different cast. It's been long enough between then and now. I mean...
My problem with that is that I don't want a retelling of the same story. I don't need another Spider-Man reboot where we learn that he get bit by a spider.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't know that they're going to go there. You know, it might be... more fantastical, but they you know, it might be more like
if they cast lookalikes that were younger looking,
yeah,
they might be able to do like what the show was supposed to be, that the movie was based on that didn't exist.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is, my understanding is it's supposed to be based, before it was going to be like a continuation of the movie universe, but in this case it's going to be the Tales of the Galaxy Quest, you know, like it was the TV show.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Either way, I'm intrigued.
I will watch it if they get it done.
Yeah.
I've been in, you know, also on Amazon is The Lord of the Rings that they've evidently been spending millions and millions of dollars on.
Where is it?
Where is it, dude?
I keep hearing about yet another Battlestar Galactica reboot.
I loved the last reboot.
Yeah, I did too.
I don't know that I want to see a reboot of a reboot.
Depends on how it's done. I'm hearing more Stargate again.
I am hearing a lot more about Stargate. But it's again, it's... Because the Stargate guys, after they did years of Stargate SG-1, got smart and branched it out, so they now have a method of bringing Stargate back with new characters, and it's still having continuity.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I've heard, is that it's...
they really need to wrap up Stargate Universe better than they did.
They do.
Even if they do it like the Cerritos and Lower Decks, where it's like they refer to it, correct. I'm okay with that.
Correct. I'm totally okay with that.
And if you want to drop in a David Blue cameo, I'm okay with that too.
David Blue.
That's the actor's name. The fat guy, You Are Here.
Yeah. The kid.
Whose name is just totally... Eli.
Eli. That's right. That's right.
Oh, man, I had to pull that out of somewhere.
That was another one that had a great cast. You know, Lou Diamond Phillips, and they could certainly bring him back. He's been in several shows since Universe, and he could believably take over his character. Now, I don't know about the other Colonel, the one who actually was on the...
He's still been doing stuff, too. Yeah. And what I like about Colonel Young is he was never supposed to be
there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was supposed to be done.
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
He was retiring.
Done.
Yeah.
And so you don't really necessarily have to have him be super fit.
Yeah, well, they also could bring back the lieutenant.
Matthew Scott could come back.
Yeah.
TJ could come back, I'm sure. Some of those...
I mean, I don't think they want to keep them as main characters. They need to start fresh with a new... But, you know, if you reference them...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you're going to drop them in, drop them in.
Yep.
I mean, one of my favorite episodes of the third season of Sequest was when they brought back Ben Krieg,
mm-hmm.
and when they brought Bridger back, and, you know, I mean, they refer to some of the things that, some of the guys that they had served with before. I mean, so, it's not that...
Interesting you bring up Sequest. So, I didn't know this, and I should have known it. I just never paid attention to it. But the 76, I think? 77? 78, sometime in there. Barbara Eden movie, Harper Valley PTA, which is... And the reason I got to looking at this is because Tom T. Hall, who was a prolific songwriter in both bluegrass, country, and pop music, wrote Harper Valley PTA, and a guy... movie producer out of Cincinnati bought the rights to it as a result of people buying the rights to a whole bunch of Tom T. Hall movies that came out in the 70s, or Tom T. Hall songs and lyrics that came out in the 70s as popular songs that then had movies tied to them, like the Ballad of Billy Joel and things like that. And so he bought that. Well, it was filmed in Lebanon, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. And so in the beginning and the end of the movie, Lebanon is close. It's actually the county seat of the county I live in. There are these huge flybys, which had to have been taken from a small plane. If you watch, you can see a little bit of jitter in the camera, you know. But they fly down Main Street, and you can see the Golden Lamb, which is a very famous restaurant in southwestern Ohio, because 4 or 5 presidents through the history of the United States have stayed there. And, you know, and you see the Warren County Fairgrounds, and you can see what at the time in the late 70s, what was the high school, which today is now the intermediate school. And you see downtown, and there's recognizable places. And so I got a copy of the movie so I could look at the flybys and stuff. And we ended up watching the movie. Royce Applegate ends up being an actor in that movie. I had no idea.
And he was a prolific actor.
And he had no mustache or beard. You know, see, in a way you don't recognize him, and that's why I didn't recognize him, but he opens his mouth, and you hear...
Who is that?
You hear Applegate, Chief Applegate,
Chief Crocker.
Chief Crocker come out of his mouth, you know?
That's funny.
And, but that being said, Sequest segue.
Thank you. I was like, man, where's this going?
But, That would be, you know, that would be another one I would be interested in, a reboot.
Sequest?
Sequest.
There's, the fan groups keep talking about it. I struggle with that.
Well, the
because
problem
it's
is,
so, it's such a difficult show.
It would be an easier show today to produce than when they produced
agreed.
It. Because CGI
is so much better.
It's so, well, you know, it's one of the things my son and I, who he is a visual communications major, which is kind of the, you know, the combination of video arts and graphic design, and I mean, visual communications covers all of that, what he's learning, and he's very prolific creator in like Blender and some of these 3D tools that are out there today. And you know, there are things that you can do on a well-equipped home computer in Linux or Mac OS and even Windows today that would rival, you know, do the, what they, well, not only rival, does a better job than anything they did in Star Trek The Next Generation in the 7 years it ran, much less Sequest.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it would be so much easier to produce that show today with CGI, you know, the deepfake technology. I mean, you could bring Roy Scheider back from the dead as a cameo if you needed to. Because even Disney, who's really been perfecting it, has...
Well, you know, the funny thing about that, because I know you're gonna bring up Mandalorian and the Luke Skywalker thing.
Well, the killer is... so.
That's all off-the-shelf technology
that is all
had nothing to do with Disney
no.
or Lucasfilm.
No, but there's a 17-year-old kid out there. If you go to YouTube, and I forget what his YouTube channel is, I have it saved because I'm subscribed to his channel, who's been redoing those scenes at home. And actually, he got hired by Disney, the Pixar division of Disney,
yeah,
because he did it so well, it was better than what they actually produced. And that's what I'm saying. It would be so much easier today to do this stuff and create a compelling show. I mean, Babylon 5 would be awesome to reboot the same way. You know, and but it's been so long on Babylon 5 that a lot of people don't remember, you know, Sinclair and Sheridan and the actors, because for the most part, other than Bruce Boxleitner, almost all the actors on
Babylon
5 were no names.
Yeah.
You know, Mira Furlan, she was famous in Poland where she was from, but she wasn't famous worldwide until Babylon 5.
Bill Mumy was, and still is, kind of a name. But he and Bruce Boxleitner are really the only two that...
Yeah, and Bill Mumy was kind of a secondary character in the show.
True.
You know.
But so was Stephen Cotto as Veer.
True.
And...
Well, what about Garibaldi? You know, I always thought that actor should have been played by Bruce Willis. And I think you could get Bruce Willis to do it today, because one of the things Matt and I were talking yesterday is I was telling him about some...
really crappy
some
B-movies
like
he's doing
B-science
lately.
Science fiction movies that have great production values that he's been doing. One is called Cosmic Sin, and I forget what the other one was, but the plots are so simply written. And it's almost like it's like a cookie cutter character. The name changes, but he plays the same character in both movies, just doing different stuff. And, but you know, that being said, you know, you might be able to get a cast, you know, and because of limitation, I mean, the first season of Babylon 5, this is how long ago it was. Amiga computers were, and the video toaster that at the time was only available for the Amiga, was what they did all the CG, all the space scenes and all the external, you know, from space planet shots and all of that. And everything else was practical effects, you know? And so, again, it was another one of those shows that if redone, might be better today than it was originally. Plus, I want them to get rid of that whole... At the end there, when, you know, and they had the spinoff series that didn't really take off with the Rangers and all now, that crap.
There was a spinoff show called Excalibur with Gary Cole as the lead. Was actually pretty good.
I don't know that I remember that one. I remember the one where it was all about the Rangers and the White Star, and you know, it did have Bruce Boxleitner, Mira Ferland in it, but they were like incidental characters that just they would bring in occasionally. You'd see them on a comm screen, you know, so that they could say you could say it was tied to. But I didn't think that was Excalibur. Maybe it was. I just don't remember.
There. Earth was attacked with a bioweapon, and so they send this ship out to go find these aliens who attacked them.
Yeah, I think that was the same show that I'm thinking about. Sorry, I'm making a quick look up on IMDb. I don't think that's what it was called. Crusade was what that one was called.
The ship is Excalibur.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you're right.
And yeah, it had Gary Cole and Tracy Scoggins and Daniel Day Kim.
Yes. And Scoggins played her Babylon 5 character, and she wasn't in it a whole lot, as I recall.
Yeah. That's right. He was Captain Matthew Gideon. And she was Captain Elizabeth Lockley.
Yes.
And Daniel Day Kim was Lieutenant John Matheson.
That was my introduction to him. He's done so much.
Yeah, so that show came
after that.
Babylon 5 was 1993, and this show was 1999. I may have to go back and watch this, give it another look.
You should, it's good.
So...
I had it on DVD at one point, but I think I loaned it to somebody.
And never got it back.
And never got it back.
So, anything else that you want to add to the entertainment talk?
I think we're good. I mean, we could go down a whole rabbit hole of shows that should be remade.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
We'll save that for another
day. I do want to talk about Blake 7. So, Blake 7, the whole series, which was three seasons or three series, as our Brit friends like to call them. 13 episodes in each, which is actually a lot of episodes for a British series. So there's 39 episodes, but the whole thing... So Blake 7 was BBC's answer to Star Wars, made in the late 70s. It started in 1979, I believe, was when they first aired the first season. I've watched about half the first season.
Who's airing that?
That's BritBox, which is BBC ITV's streaming service.
Yeah. You need to put that on Plex, if you haven't already.
But so I watched about the half of the first season. And, you know, like Terry Nation from Doctor who created the Daleks, this is his series, his baby. It's really good. The practical effects suck. Production value is what you expect from... The BBC in the late 70s, early 80s, it actually gets a lot better after the first season. I've taken a peek at the second and third series. But that was also the time that the first series is very much like the Tom Davidson Doctor Who, like the practical effects and the way they built the sets and the way they clothe the characters, you know, the costuming and everything. Because it's kind of funny. So they wear like these pirate shirts and pants with boots. And then they have like these smocks that they put over them that only cover their front and their back, you know, and then have little strings that tie them together around their waist.
Okay.
And but it's like that's the fashion of the time. It's supposed to be the future. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, this is not very futuristic, you know. When you compare it to like Buck Rogers in the 25th century that came out in the late 70s, early 80s here in the United States with Gil Gerard and Aaron Gray.
Buck Rogers.
Which was a great show after the movie, you know. But you compare that and you compare it to the original Battlestar Galactica, which also came out in the same time period. Their outfits, at the when you take them in context of the time, and even when you look at them now, they look dated to us because we're jaded.
Yeah.
But they looked futuristic.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't like something, they were similar to what people would wear. And I still think the uniforms for the Galactica crew, and particularly the Viper pilots,
yeah,
were really cool even today.
Yeah.
From the original Battlestar Galactica. You know, so much more so than the reboot. Because the reboot's actually, in some respects, is... excuse me a minute. Is really kind of cool because by using, at the time, which is still valid today, they made the uniforms of the, you know, the colonial military and the day-to-day clothes of the civilians, you know, all reflect what we wear now.
Yeah.
It was easy to suspend the disbelief because it was only, you know, it basically was the idea of that, well, you know, in a sufficiently advanced culture, you know, modern technology would be common. Like, you know, if you even went back to the 60s, when the cell phone was invented, but you had an iPhone today.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see that even today with people who were born in the 40s. There are a lot of people who were born in the 40s and 50s who still have problems with touch interfaces because they grew up and their bodies and minds, the muscle memory expects tactile buttons and things like that. That's why you see a lot of older people who have flip phones still.
We were just talking about that. Yeah. My mother is one.
Yeah. Well, the guy who used to be the director of operations for the company I worked for, he had, I think he was a T-Mobile customer too, because I think T-Mobile's the only one right now supporting those old style flip phones. But he used like an old Kyocera flip phone forever until the day he retired. And the phones were getting so hard to get, he would buy them on eBay. And so if a phone broke, he would just pull his SIM out and put it in another one. You know, but he didn't have a smartphone. It barely texted people, much less, you know, anything else besides calling people. But, you know, that's a whole nother discussion. Maybe we'll get into that discussion in the next episode. I'll make a note of it. But saying what I'm saying, I'm really enjoying the story of Blake Seven and what's going on. It's in some respects, it's very similar in a way to Logan's Run. So the idea is that the Federation, in their case, that's what they call them, is a controlling government, and they control their people by drugging them, erasing memories, you know, all kinds of things that you find out. And there's a resistance going on Earth and the other planets, the other colonies, and where, like, they keep you from eating and drinking for 36 hours so that you're not under the influence of the drugs they give you to be passive and just accept what's going on. The government will execute people. I mean, it's reminiscent of Logan's Run. It's reminiscent of THX, George Lucas's first movie. That it's reminiscent of, you know, there are a lot of scientific science fiction stories that are similar to that. And then you have the Star Trek aspect of it, like they have teleporters and they have these like phaser type guns that are kind of in between a phaser and a lightsaber. You know, and I think a lot of the clothing choice in the at least in the first season, is because it was like what they wore on Yavin in, or not Yavin, on Tatooine in Star Wars, you know? So they have tighter leggings with these blousy shirts with, you know, something over them. But, you know, because everything I've researched says that this was kind of, when Star Wars came out, this was the response from the BBC, you know, that, but it's got some fairly good actors, and it's a little campy, but I mean, part of that's because we're jaded, not because the stories have been decent.
And again, it's British sci-fi.
Yeah.
I mean,
it moves a lot slower than we're used to. So you have to kind of, you know, chill out and, you know, get into the early Doctor Who vibe going on. But like I said, I've very, very much enjoyed the show, what I've watched of it, and I will continue to watch it, but, you know, there have been other things I want to go on. Here's another one we forgot to talk about. So, are you familiar with, we talked about this last time, never mind. I'm not going to talk about it. Sorry. You guys are going to have to go back and listen to two episodes ago. And let's see what else. Oh, going back to Star Trek, one last thing. So they keep... I have a feeling we're probably going to see Prodigy before we see Strange New Worlds or the next season of Discovery or the next season of Picard.
How is that possible? Because they're still casting for that. They haven't even shot anything, and Strange New Worlds is done.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They've got quite a bit. They have a complete, fully sequenced promo, and you can tell it's from parts of the first episode. So I have a feeling they have most of the first episode done. And the fact that they're making announcements on the two new villain, the two protagonists or antagonists in the show, which one of them is John Noble.
Yes.
You know,
I can't think of a better bad guy.
Me neither. Even as a good guy, he's a bad guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other one I think is hilarious too, which is Jimmy Simpson. But basically, they've added them to the show as the... I think that it's more of... They announced them after the fact that they've already had them in the studio doing stuff. Because the trailer is fairly complete. And you know that the trailer, all the footage in the trailer is going to be in the first show. Because it's a story. It's part of the story. As opposed to being like, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so and all of this. It's a cut together piece. So I'm fairly certain they have a lot of Prodigy done, and it might be released before Strange New Worlds and the next season of Discovery. Now, what I'm curious about is what's
so
holding
cartooned
up,
out. What's if holding that's, up the if production? That's what's next, yeah. I'm
what's holding up the production of Picard? Because that's one they haven't announced.
Well, part of it, I think, is he's like 4,000 years old, and because of COVID, they're not wanting to put him at risk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same reason why we don't see DiNozzo Sr. on NCIS anymore. Dude's 8,000 years old.
That's true.
They don't want to put him at risk. If I had to guess, that would be my guess. I mean, you don't want to be the show that kills Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. So I'm thinking we'll see that one last.
And to be honest, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. Picard, of all the new series that came out, Picard is...
Now, I will say that when they brought out the John DeLancey stuff and they started talking about it, there was some excitement built around it. So it's not like we've not heard anything.
Correct.
But
correct.
It has been a while.
Well, the thing is, they showed some scenes, some still pictures from where they were filming. Now, that's also one of the things that's different is Discovery and Strange New Worlds did all of their filming and production in the Paramount Studios in Vancouver, British Columbia. And Picard is being filmed in L.A. So that might also be affecting things as well. So I'm curious to how, when we will see that out. And, you know, and Kurtzman keeps saying, he keeps laying out that there's a couple more shows in the works.
So one of those shows is Sisko.
Yes.
Which, I know you and I have talked about this before.
Well,
I don't think we've done that.
Brooks actually wants to come back and reprise the role.
Which is amazing to me because he's the one out of all of the people
he was the least expected. Exactly. He was the least into Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, he may have had a change of heart, too, over time. Heck, I'd love it if they bring back a Tuvok show with Tim Russ. He's been a prolific actor. I think he probably burnt a bridge with Paramount, though, along with Walter Koenig doing the Star Trek Renegade stuff.
I'm not so sure about that because, you know, quite frankly, those shows, I think, are what made the Paramount Plus
stuff seem feasible. Hype, yeah, well, it kept the hype going, too. You know, but they were one of the ones that had to change their name and remove all the references from Star Trek after the show that I really want those guys to who were doing Axanar, because they had quite a bit of it done. I want them to just release the video files anonymously on the internet or somebody who might have a set of the discs, you know, before they got shut down.
That's so sad that none of that will see the light of day. Because the promo clips for that were really good.
Yes. Well, a lot of people thought it really was Paramount doing that.
Well, and that's just it. And that's what I'm talking about when I say that those productions made this Paramount Plus stuff seem like it was a workable thing. Yep. You can make Star Trek and not spend a crap load of money and it be
good
enough.
Well, and that was part of the problem at the time. You know, they wanted high production value, particularly from the third season on, but even from the first season of Next Gen till the end of Enterprise. You know, the production, you can't flaw their production values. The shows, when you watch it, even today, some of the stories and some of the acting, not so much in Voyager and Enterprise, those seem to have tightened things up. Early seasons of TNG are kind of hard to watch. Middle seasons of Deep Space Nine are kind of hard to watch. the whole Dominion War.
At least that show was supposed to be about a war.
Yes. But the production values were good.
Yes.
You know. One of my favorite episodes of Star Trek happens to be the Deep Space Nine Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal, where they cut the original TOS footage with Avery Brooks. And
now, what I think is entertaining about that is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I recall reading about that same time, you had those Star Trek Continues guys.
That's when they started doing stuff. Yeah,
they were consulted
on the because they had built an Enterprise bridge from TOS that was so accurate, and Paramount had destroyed those sets back in the '60s.
Yeah,
that they
did they actually use those sets?
I think they used those sets for some of that filming.
They'd almost have to, because really, there's no Paramount owned facility that has them anymore.
Well, I think they also used those sets in the episode where they brought Scotty back in TNG.
Now, and the that they used a set that they had built for, like, the hotel in Vegas.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's or right. somewhere. They, yeah. They built that set.
The Star Trek Hilton.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, we're at an hour and 25 minutes on this episode.
Wow.
So,
somebody talks a lot.
Yeah. I think two somebody's talked a lot. So, we're going to wrap it up. We want to hear from you, our guests. Thank you for listening, if we haven't said that before. But please send us feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.